My guest at this time is Horace Cooper. He is an attorney and co-chairman of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. We want to get his reaction to how certain decisions early on in the transition period for President-elect Trump are being characterized in the press, particularly with an intense focus on whether or not these appointees are extremists and whether there is a racist element to the incoming administration. We also want to get his insights on what Donald Trump can do to deliver on some pretty big promises to the black community. And Horace, thanks very much for your time today.
Happy to be on the program.
Well, we've seen a few appointments so far. We've seen the chief of staff. We've also seen the counselor to the president. We've seen attorney general, CIA director, and national security advisor. And the two that have certainly set off the media firestorm, and as well among some liberal activists, are Jeff Sessions for attorney general and Steve Bannon for counselor to the president, with both of those nominations effectively drawing allegations that these guys are full-blown racists. What's your sense, first of all, on whether that's true and the fact that this seems to be a driving force in evaluating these selections?
I got two names I want to offer initially. One is Valerie Jarrett, and the other is Eric Holder. Valerie Jarrett was and is a key strategic advisor to President Obama. She has a curious past, a relationship internationally. She is Iranian by heritage, and has been a very, very pronounced influence in terms of setting up foreign policy, in terms of budget, and all manner of things to which she has heretofore had no public or demonstrated experience, and yet there was no scrutiny, and there continues to be no scrutiny. On the other hand, there's Eric Holder. Eric Holder had the dubious responsibility of helping former President Clinton issue what appears to have been a pay-for-play pardon scheme, and one of his very first speeches that he gave as Attorney General was to call America a coward on the question of race. These two individuals helped to encourage and promote what could only honestly be considered racially divisive policies by President Obama, and yet none of these questions were being considered. Now, I don't see any similar record with regard to the designate for Attorney General, Mr. Sessions, or to Mr. Bannon as a key strategist and counselor in the office of the White House. I don't see the similar, but I bring those two names up because I want to highlight the contrast where the media has played no role and where voices that claim they're interested in encouraging America to come together have been completely silent, even to this day, about the role that those two individuals provided in the Obama administration.
One of the things that critics will point to, as you know, Horace, is statements made by people who certainly have a reputation for being racist, whether it's David Duke or some of these white nationalist groups who are excited about some of these nominations. Does that give you pause on the nominations?
To me, there was some yokel Ohio Ku Klux Klansman who YouTubed his contributions to the Hillary Clinton campaign, his financial contributions to the Hillary Clinton campaign. Only because of it being circulated digitally was it even something that people were aware of. Mrs. Clinton was never asked to denounce it. She was never asked to condemn it. And the truth is, had she been asked, she would have said, "My record stands on its own. Why someone else wants to contribute to me isn't the question. It is what is my record." And I would say the same thing. I actually don't care whether Farrakhan or whether the Klan issues an endorsement in the election. What I care about is what are the policies and the characteristics of the individual in question who is asking for our vote. This has not been an even-handed assessment on the part of the media. And if they would like us to have this more expansive view that the supporters of a given entity or individual are as important or more important than the candidate, him or herself, then they needed to have been saying and doing that over the last 8 years, and they didn't.
Horace, obviously a lot of things get reported and discussed through the prism of race, particularly in the media, but elsewhere also. Do you get the sense that it's even more intense now that it's the Trump administration coming in?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I actually feel strongly that we are distorting the conversation generally about public policy by randomly throwing around epithets that this person or that person, either a supporter or an individual affiliated with Mr. Trump, must in some way be bigoted, racist, or sexist. It has completely diminished our ability to have any kind of real conversation about important policies. There are always benefits and costs to every public policy. The idea that if a person is for a tax cut or against a tax cut, is for a construction project or against a construction project, can only be viewed from the prism of, does that make you a racist or a sexist or some other ist, is completely unhelpful. And yet, the mainstream media, and I keep saying this, the mainstream media is working hand in glove with progressives to create this false impression. This is not good for the country. It is not helpful to pretend that the a record in America that existed during the era of Jim Crow is the functional equivalent of 21st century Trump transition team. It is not constructive, it is not positive, and in fact, it does an injustice to the wrongs that had been done and the rights that are presently being done. It is very, very destructive, and it would be helpful for civil rights groups and others who know the real history of racism and the poison that that involves to actually speak up and say, this is not racism. This is not bigotry. We know what it looks like. We know why it has occurred, and this is not that. That would be good for us to see. It has been very unhealthy that we are not seeing it.
Last question before we get to the revitalization question. The argument from Trump critics would be that Trump's own rhetoric from the campaign has led to this impression. Accurate or not?
I haven't heard Mr. Trump say, if I were president, we're going to go to the schoolhouse and block people from being able to come and attend if they're black. I haven't heard Mr. Trump say that if you want to pass a law the way the Republicans successfully were able to do in the 30s and 40s to make it a federal law against lynching, that he would join in with the folks who filibustered that effort. I haven't seen the effort on the part of Mr. Trump or any comments similar to suggest that on voting rights, that he would ensure that just the mere color of your skin would be a great basis for denying you the right to participate. The progressives and the media forget there have never in America been whites-only Republican primaries. The only whites-only primaries that ever existed were the party that calls itself liberalism, the party that calls itself progressives, the Democrats. If we are serious about looking at the rhetoric, we need to match the rhetoric with the reality. Nothing in Donald Trump's commentaries is the equivalent of that old evil of segregation and racism.
We're talking with Horace Cooper. And Horace, this last question obviously has so many different possible dimensions to it. We could go on for hours. But Donald Trump has effectively promised a new deal for the African-American community. And during the campaign, when he made a pitch, he said, look at your communities. Your streets aren't safe. There aren't jobs in your communities anymore. We've got to change that. And I'm the guy who's going to do it. If you were to offer him a thumbnail sketch or a few bullet points on how to get the ball rolling on a major challenge like that, what would you encourage him to do?
Well, first thing I want want to say is that a lot of folks have denied that there was any interest on the part of Black America in the agenda that he identified. Even though the evidence is not easily to solicit, it appears if you go precinct by precinct, three times as many Black men as Black women actually supported Donald Trump. And I think this particular appeal had a lot to do with it. Up until about 1956 or 57, Black men were the most employed individuals in the United States of America. And there is a desire to see how you can change from being the least employed to the most employed. Among the things that would be great priorities for the incoming Trump administration is a renewed interest on emphasis on school choice. We absolutely have to stop the union stranglehold over our schools and allow our young people, particularly in the inner city, to have the option of either leaving poorly functioning public schools or threaten to be able to leave them, and also to be able to go to the kinds of schools that invoke faith. That's a key ingredient in the Black community that will instill the kinds of achievement values that are biblically based. Those things, that would go a long way to ensuring that the young Black men and women who graduate from failed public schools and not able to read their diploma would be able to not only read their diploma, but be able to compete. That we set up enterprise zones, that we understand that if you want to incentivize employers, then you create the right regulatory regime and the right tax regime so that it is possible that jobs in the community that's close to where inner city residents live can develop. These are really significant kinds of policies, and we absolutely need to have a conversation about our immigration policy that has had the effect of jamming inner city residents that are interested in competing by having people substantially underbid them because those individuals aren't paying taxes and aren't participating in the citizenship requirements that our regulatory and tax schemes require in America. Black men in particular find themselves in a very, very difficult position, and I think a Trump administration focused on how we get people back to work would go a long way toward that new 21st century deal that he's offering.
Horace, we'll have to call time there. You've been very generous with yours. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Horace Cooper is an attorney, and he's co-chairman of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. That's a group of African-American conservatives. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.